How many of you are under 30? Okay. Okay. So what always surprises me is how those timeless melodies, those timeless things, I sang them because my mom and dad loved that kind of music. They loved, so I know every lyric from the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. Then I stop. It's sort of like, okay, then my era, and I really don't know the lyrics anymore. So anyway, thank you for that. It was beautiful. Now for the setup. Our whole January is living their vision, and our whole year is about joyous living, living joyously. And today's talk is unrepeatable you. Unrepeatable you. Do you know that you are made in the image and likeness of the One, and you are unrepeatable? Put your hand on your heart. Feel it beating for a moment. And say after me, I am an unrepeatable miracle. Say it again. I am an unrepeatable miracle. See, it's the truth. It is the truth. Your spiritual DNA, as well as your human DNA, can never be repeated. There is no one like you. And your particular gifts that you came here to give are blessings to everyone that you touch. And you're connected to all life. So you're touching a lot of people you don't know you're touching. You're making a difference in people's lives that you don't know that you're making. And so that takes me to the setup. So remember that Chris said that it was about, in Judy Garland's character, that she had all of these dishes to do. Next week, we have the wonderful James Golden, Reverend Dr. James Golden, coming to do a retreat with us. And one of his most tender stories, and you can ask him yourself if you're there at the retreat, or even if you're here Sunday morning next week, because he'll be here. So it's possible, since I heard it 8 years ago, I have parts of it wrong. But this is what I remember. His guru, the person he was following as far as his meditation practice, he's a religious scientist just like everybody here, but his guru as far as his meditation practice, it was a woman called Guru Mai. And he finally had an opportunity to spend a whole weekend retreat with her. And so he got there early, or maybe it was a day-long retreat, got there early, and as he knows to do, he asked if there's anything he could do to help. Put me to work. I know the value of sacred service. And so they said, showed him the kitchen. There were all these pots and pans to do. And he did them happily because he was in sacred service to this divine idea. And then more pots came in and more pans came in and more dishes came in. And the whole retreat went by. He didn't get out of the kitchen. He didn't get out of the kitchen. And he went to the garden in a moment of contemplation. How could this be? How could this be a blessing? And what he read in the garden, there was how there are stone sculptures everywhere. And what he read in one of those sculptures was, wherever I look, I see the face of God. So he decided, okay, I've seen them in the pots and pans. And that sounds like he was just making do, but there's more to the story. So he started to go, and someone admired his prayer shawl. And he knew that spiritually, when someone admired something, you're supposed to offer it to them. So he did, hoping that the person wouldn't take it because it was very sacred to him. But the person did. And again, he had to do his spiritual work to get back on track, to get to the place where he was still in love with that person, still had love in his heart for the person that took his shawl and for not having a shawl. And as he was going, his guru was driving past and gave him her shawl. So he had a more significant prayer shawl than he would have had he not followed his intuition, followed his heart, done what he knew was his to do. Now, I'm not saying that if someone admires your diamond ring, you better give it to them. I'm not saying that. It's not necessarily your practice, but it was Dr. James's practice, and particularly about his spiritual clothing, anything that had to do with him spiritually. So for me, it's a very it's very significant about following your heart, your intuition, even when it's uncomfortable. Because no one else can be the place in life that you have been called to show up. No one else can be the place in life where you have been called to show up. We were talking in class last week about shyness. And I'm a very introverted person. I would rather just be quiet and listen to the divine in other people or around me. But sometimes I'm called to, I need to, talk. Here being one of them. I mean, it would be a very short service if I just got up and smiled at you and sat down again. I might do that one day. Who knows? Anyway, this last Friday, this is one of the ways the divine works through you, and you never know how it's working. I was going to my very first San Clemente Chamber of Commerce mixer. Now, you can imagine for a shy person, this was uncomfortable for me until I got my practitioner, Patty Mercado, to do some prayer work for me, because I wanted to go and be relaxed and be who I am, who I have come here to be. And so I got there early, and as I was standing in the doorway, one of our members saw me and said, "What are you doing here?" And I explained, and she'd been thinking about calling me all day. She had spiritual needs, and there I was. Wayne Dyer says, "Who arranges these things?" It really isn't a who, it's life itself. See, if I had done what I normally do of going, "Oh, well, they won't miss me. I don't have to go. In fact, they don't even know I'm supposed to be coming," I would have missed that divine appointment. And I would have also missed meeting about a dozen people that now have some idea that we're here in Talega and some of the things that we stand for. So I did what I needed to do. Do what you're called to do. And that what you are called to do cannot be repeated. Yesterday, I'm going to read you something that we heard yesterday, so pardon to the people that were there. Yesterday, many of us attended the memorial service in Palm Springs for one of my ministerial students, Doug Yagaloff, who was a student with Reverend Karen, Reverend Patty, Doris, and Janet Moore, etc. And it was a really good tribute to him. The interesting thing was he didn't want it. Right up until his almost dying breath, he said, "Don't do that formal thing. I don't want it." And his friend said, "We're not doing it for you. We're doing it for ourselves. We need it." And this is something called the Parable of the Twins that was read there, and I really love it. You're going to hear this a lot, I think. So this begins, "One day a mother conceived twins. One child was a girl, the other was a boy. Months passed and they developed. As they grew, they sang for joy, 'Isn't it great to be alive?' Together they explored the mother's womb. When they found their mother's life cord, they shouted for joy. 'How great is our mother's love that she shares her life with us.' Soon the twins began to change drastically. 'What does this mean?' asked the boy. 'It means that our life in the womb is coming to an end,' said the girl. 'But I don't want to leave the womb,' the boy said. 'I want to stay here forever.' 'We have no choice,' said the girl, 'but maybe there is life after birth.'" How can there be?" asked the boy. "We will shed our mother's cord, and how is life possible without it? Besides, there's evidence in the womb that others were here before us, and none of them ever came back to tell us that there is life after birth. No, this is the end." And so the boy fell into despair, saying, if life in the womb ends in death, what's the purpose? What's the meaning? Maybe we don't even have a mother, he said. Maybe we made her up just to feel good. Sounds familiar. But we must have a mother, said the girl. How else did we get here? How else do we stay alive? And so the last day in the womb were filled with deep questioning and fear. Finally, the moment of birth arrived, and the twins opened their eyes. They cried for joy when they saw what they saw exceeded their wildest dreams. Okay, that's the story of life, of birth, of death. And we born into this place say the same things. Maybe we just made up God. Maybe there is no eternal life. And yet something's beating our heart. Something's responding to us by divine law. Something greater than we know, that thing that arranges things and put me in the right place at the right time. Something. That's something that I think is a divine and I call God. Anyway, Ernest Holmes says this, there is but one mind in the universe and man uses it. Man is an identity in the universe, a center of God consciousness. At first he is ignorant of this and misuses his power, consequently bringing on himself misfortune and negation. It's not a punishment, it's a consequence. It's a consequence of misusing the law of mind. When we think we can't, then we prove we can't. When we think we aren't, then we prove we aren't. So at the beginning of this year, what a wonderful time to have an attitude adjustment and to not only think and nurture that belief, but to know that whatever is called forth from within you is yours to do, and you're the only one that can do it. You're the only one that can be there at that exact time. You're the only one that can be that listening for a friend. You're the only one that can speak those words to a loved one. You're the only one, you see, unrepeatable you. Unrepeatable you. Wonderful, awe-inspiring you. Just the way you are and just the way you are not. The poet Rumi also has something to say on this, and I'm going to read that little bit. I was given this beautiful illuminated Rumi, and it's the poems or stories and then drawings that go with it. It's just gorgeous. I really appreciate it, but the print is a little small, so I copied it. And this is entitled The Real Work. And I think it's appropriate today that we ask ourselves, what is ours to do? What is our real work? And this is how this goes. There is one thing in this world that you must never forget to do. Let me say that again. There is one thing in this world you must never forget to do. If you forget everything else and not this, there's nothing to worry about. But if you remember everything else and forget this, then you will have done nothing in your life. It's as if a king has sent you to some country to do a task, and you perform 100 other tasks, but not the one he sent you to do. So human beings come to this world to do particular work. That work is the purpose, and each is specific to the person. If you don't do it, it's as though a priceless Indian sword were used to slice rotten meat. It's as if a golden bowl is being used to cook turnips, when one thing from that bowl could buy 100 pots. It's a knife of the finest tempering, nailed into a wall to hang things on. So the one thing that you've come to do is an expression of the divine. It's unrepeatable. No one else can do it the way you do it, even if everybody else did the same thing, yours would be unique for you. One of our friends, and for the time that she was in Kenya the first time, we were supporting her work, our Reverend Connie Phelps. And she's back in Kenya. After 2 years in Edmonton, she's back in Kenya. And I was talking to Ryan Moore, who's here with us today. And Ryan was part of our InTight Flight Teens for a long time as part of it, and also as director of one of the leaders of it. And Ryan just did how many months, Ryan? 3 months across Africa from coast to coast, but he wasn't in Kenya. And one of the things when the in-flight teens were in Malawi building schools, they worked with the children, and they always taught the children the chant we used, "You are the face of God," and they taught the hand movements. Connie did the same thing to the children she was working with in Kenya. And when she returned, a little boy who's now 8, so he was 6, did the whole song for her with movements. He was so proud of himself, and she was so moved that her work had made a difference. See, she knew way back when she came to talk to us, she knew she needed to go there. She didn't know a soul there. She thought her boyfriend was going with her, and he didn't show up to the plane. He just didn't go. She went by herself to do this big work, and she did it for as long as she was allowed in the country. And then now that she's saved enough money, she's back for the same length of time, and then she'll go back to Edmonton, save some money, and go back again, because it's what feeds her. So I ask you this morning, what is it that your heart is longing for you to do? And it might be a big thing. It might be more books, but it might be a small thing. It might be to forgive that person that's you've forced out of your heart. It might be something tangible or intangible, but you're the only one that really knows what it is. And to live joyously, you must live from that place within your heart that knows and knows that it knows that that's your purpose. That's what you've come here for. I think that's it. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks. I sometimes fool you, don't I? And you think I'm going to go on and on. And you and here they are back once more. Welcome back to the platform, Chris Shelton.